Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. I am Tom Mills and today I'm joined by Sam Williams.
Thomas, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on. We are the day before the 151st Open Championship.
At Royal Liverpool Golf Club. We are currently sat in our booth in the media centre, Klang. We've got a little radio booth up in the media centre.
It's nice to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, it feels like... How many pods has it been since
we've been getting a lot of messages saying, is it now basically just sort of Tom from the Jar?
Tom from the Jar does interviews. Yeah, I've done the last... I don't know, Stephen Proctor did...
Joe McDonald did James Blair
yesterday, but... Fact of the matter is, I just know more about golf than you.
You've got quite territorial, I think, over things. You've become very territorial over guests, what's happening, where you're going. It is absolutely... I feel like you've made a land grab and it's like... You're sort of there's, you know, when puppies go through that process of
I'm marking.
Yeah. They're going for pack leader. That's what you're gunning for at the moment. So I've just got to keep knocking you down a little bit. But yeah, here we are. Daily podcast from the Open Championship. It is Wednesday lunchtime. It's looking quite nice out there. It was very soft this morning, but the course seems to be drying out a little bit. Well, yesterday was so wet.
Very, very wet yesterday, but very dry today and sunny and warm and windy, which is all good conditions to dry it out, which is kind of what it needs really to get a bit of teeth, is to dry it out, just to make sure that we get a bit more run in the fairways. It's very soft, but it's just like James said yesterday in the podcast, it's just a function of having a very dry spring and a fairly wet summer. So
I think it is a real halfway house between 2006 and 2014. Six being like a car park, a Weetabix, however you describe it, and 14 being really heavy, wet, dense. That was, I think, the first Open I came to that. And I think the other notice versus 2014 is when I came to that Open, standing behind the third tee, we've got to stop caveating this with first for the members, you get the gist, behind that third tee, there was no like grandstand there. That was just... stand up behind there, watch them here. I vividly remember watching Ricky Fowler hitting 4-iron up there and stuff. Whereas now, there's a huge, huge bit of grandstand. Like, walking around here, it's incredible to see just how much stuff they pack into. Royal Liverpool's a big place, but it's not the biggest sort of property you'd put a course on. It's amazing how much stuff they pack in here.
It's a big old sort of... big build. There's this big infrastructure. It's just big, isn't it? You know, I've been doing a bit of work with Bledge and the Greenkeeper team, and to get from A to B is hard. It's just feels like it's just really difficult to walk around all the infrastructure, getting across the fairways, and yeah, it's
yeah, the effort that goes into the delivery. I mean, didn't you say you bumped into somebody who run the media centre broadband or something like that?
Yeah, about a month ago, yeah.
telling me.
He was like, oh yeah, the media centre's my baby. I've got like 600 miles worth of internet cable in there. I was like, bloody hell's bells. But it's probably an exaggeration, but it was an enormous amount of cabling to go into this, to make all this run. And you walk around, like I was out there this morning, I was up 3:30, I started working at 3:45 this morning, and you wander around. And
last year, you weren't even in bed at that time.
It's a very different Open for us this year. It's less rosé fueled and more actual work. But it's strange because you walk around, and like I was walking around the 15th tee, the back of Little Eye, 17th green, obviously. And all the all the cabling that's there, the cameras, the track mans, they're just the sheer amount of infrastructure is mind blowing. We went and walked the course a bit earlier on, and we watched people come. We were at the back of six, were we?
Yep.
Yeah, back of six, par three, and it's like we were talking in that stand, saying it is just unrecognizable from a Hoylake that I've played a handful of times in the past, and it's just like. you can't. It's just a different place.
It's lovely though, knowing the course well. I'd say this is my first Open where I really feel like I know the course a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not playing it every week, but I've played it enough to have an appreciation of the different surrounds on the greens and, you know, the good misses and the bad misses. So that's really interesting to watch. I guess just sort of jumping into it, should we talk a little bit about...
What's the structure? Like, talk us through the structure.
So I think...
Because you wanted to claim back control of the podcast, so...
Well, I think we should talk about course setup a little bit. Just some early observations in terms of how those holes are playing. I think talk about the fan experience, you know, and talk about... it's not easy to see a lot of golf. Like, we've been to the the US Open qualifying at Walton Heath, rather... going to events where you really have great access. You come here, it's like quite hard to see a golf shot, actually.
Yeah.
You've got to work for it. We're at the FootJoy Tented Village last night. There's loads to chat about. And we should add, we've had a pretty hot start on content. Like, your film of us prattling on about the course holes has done phenomenally well.
Mm. Landed well. We had some nice shout-outs from some nice people. So
what a difference that makes, releasing content in the Open Week.
Yeah.
I mean, like RNGC, you know, the film of the Walter Hagen win in 1922 at Royal St. George's. Like, just not a chance people are going to watch that. But no, that's been good. Charlie wrote a wonderful little piece for us, didn't he, yesterday on the ranking of the Open special tour bags. We're going to be publishing a piece this afternoon about the amateur players. Obviously, Royal Liverpool has such a great history with amateur golf. So we thought it was right to do a bit of a profile piece on the different amateurs that will be playing this year.
Just talking about the film that we made, we picked out a couple of holes and we talked about them. We picked out open 3, 4, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 17. Has your opinion changed on any of that have you seen any other holes you think are playing interesting, or have you seen... Has your mind been changed at all?
I thought it was really interesting. Yesterday's wind was coming in from an altogether different direction. So getting my bearings here, it was coming in more across. It was coming in really at 90 degrees from the prevailing wind direction. I noticed the fourth
180
hole
degrees from the prevailing wind. It was the opposite of the prevailing wind.
Was it the complete opposite?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Because 2-4, was into... yesterday, and it's downwind today.
Well, this isn't about saying wasn't I right. This is like watching the fourth hole. It's quite interesting to see how they play that, because it's so narrow. It's kind of short to medium length. Today it's downwind, and you can see them shovel, a few of them in practice rounds are shoveling drive up near the green, giving themselves a look with chip from one of the runoff areas and trying to make birdie. Whereas, you know, there's also loads of people hanging back with irons and leaving themselves 120, 130 in. 4 really is an interesting hole to see how they play it. Whereas yesterday it was head on into the wind. They were just hitting 4 or 5 irons short of the traps. And, you know, I think that's kind of stood up. I was interested to see how 3 would have played. Because
I thought
we were going to see people just binning drives over in long and left and taking relief. From what I've seen in practice,
I haven't seen anyone do that in practice.
People have just played it with respect in the same way the members play. They seem to strike their long irons a little bit better than most of the members up here probably do.
Mm.
But they just nut a long iron right up onto that corner and then play along the out of bounds there. I thought we might see a few people pull out driver and go for it. Nothing so far.
I haven't seen any so far. You know, granted, we've been on site 2 days now. 3 days? Mm. 3 days now. And... you know, I'm not parking out on the third hole to watch it, but I haven't seen a single drive hit off that one yet.
No.
I've seen a few groups go through, and I thought I would. So, yeah, like you say, they seem to be respecting it. I wonder if it firms up, whether that'll change slightly. You know, clubs are going to have to change, because if they hit the same clubs as soft as it is at the moment, if you get that extra 10, 15 yards of release, you're in the rough through the fairway, and you don't want to be playing. If you're beyond that kink in the fairway on 3 and you're in the rough, you are then playing directly towards the out of bounds. Mm. As opposed, so you're
I've hit a pure socket from there as well before.
I don't think these boys are worried about the hosel, but
purest socket. Can I tell you about it?
But I think it, by laying back that little bit more, they are then playing kind of either parallel to or away from that out of bounds. So it'll be interesting to see.
But that's the thing, is you've got to take it on. So you play up to the corner and you can have a slightly more liberating approach shot. Whereas you go far left and you take ultimate safety, you're playing back towards it. Now, I always like to bring this back to my own golf, don't I? But I did hit a very pure socket there once when I played it. I was quite happy with my drive. It was conservative and up the left. Got over a little 6-iron into the green, thought, oh, this feels a bit uncomfortable. I mean, my feet were in the air at impact. It was a
Why are we talking about you?
And it's just a straight socket out of bounds. The reason I say that, Thomas, is because it is an uncomfortable shot from the far left because you've got to play back at it. So
from through the fairway.
I mean, that's where the, you know, these guys are all great tacticians. They all sort of pick the course apart well. So the only hole I felt looked really, really different today than to how I've ever seen it would have been 7. That's usually a short to medium length par 4. We were stood there chatting to a few friends for a while. The hole is like north of 500 yards and it is tight. Like there is no room. I watched 2 guys out of 3 just fan 3 wood into the bund. It's a tough golf hole, that, whereas that usually feels like semi-gettable.
Well, it certainly seems like it's kind of, you know, for the members, it feels like, I'm just going to wait, 481 yards. Don't know whether you want to redo that.
It's long. It's really long.
Okay, we'll just keep rolling. It's 480 yards. But
I got to say it was more than 500, but it's like, it's give or take long.
Okay, yes, but the good thing about this media center, it offers up all these things to us. So it's got this, just to wag the tail a bit, it's got this laptop with literally everything you could ever want in front of it. So I just lean forward and check the whole info for 7. But 480. It's going to be interesting, this, because it gives us all the stats. Look at that. That's pretty good, isn't it?
So that's a little bit about the interesting holes to watch. I guess, a few things in terms of...
I'm going to add to that. We parked up on the back of 6, which is a mid-length par 3. And we sat there for 2 or 3 groups. We didn't see a single person hit the green.
It's not that windy. Like, just chatting to Jeff Shack earlier. Chatting to him earlier, and he was like, these guys, as good as they are, they're very neurotic about the sort of the wind. And when that gets up, it really gets in their head. It's the factor. It's what we need. We knew that coming into this event, but it's going to need... it's not even that strong. And they were really at 6s and 7s with how to play that hole. Loads coming up like 20, 30 yards short.
Yeah.
Completely underplaying the wind. You could then see that on holes like 12, the dogleg left, when you're down in that hill and you're playing up to the green into that prevailing wind. I'm telling you, you cannot take enough club.
We watched Adam Scott's group come through in practice at 12. And
wonderful looking man.
Yeah,
elegant and graceful. He's just
an absolute. He's just a titan of the game. He was, but his group came through, and he was the only one to hit half decent or to hold the fairway, because that, like you said in the film, that all cambers away from you. Cambers left to right, dog legs right to left. It's just not comfortable. He hit the fairway and then missed the green. Like, it's the guys you were playing with, no one hit the fairway. They all ran through right and didn't make the green. Like, it's not seemed like they've just been, like, as soft as it is compared to how it can play. It hasn't looked like they're playing lights out golf. You know, it's not target golf, is it?
They're just sharpening up. But it hasn't, yeah. That said, I think last open here, 2014, was 17 under par. 2006 was 18 under par. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the setup. So there's a couple of factors in here that we'll go into. I'm hoping we'll sort of see a little bit more of the rakes on these bunkers, the way they've been prepared, which Bledge just talked about on a couple of other podcasts. You did a podcast with him yesterday. I don't know if he talked about it then.
The concept
of lowering the sides of that sand. So
I spent a half an hour with a bunker raker today, just filming him.
Okay. Right.
Which will come out eventually.
So tell me about, in minute detail, about whether or not there's... You understand what I mean? Is there any credence in what they're saying with how they're raking
them? Yeah, well, they're trying to rake them flat. They're not trying to rake them bold. So to do that, they're meticulous in the detail they put into this. You know, they've got 2 different types of rake that they're using. You know, first of all, it's the thicker rake to aggravate the sand, and then they start getting it with the thinner combs so they can get it, and they... You know, 10 minutes a bunker, and they They're going circularly to get to kind of get that into the middle to flatten.
They've got to have
it.
A set distance from the edge of the bunker for the circular part and everything. Pledge was saying to me yesterday, the expectation.
But no, this is only to aggravate it. So they go they go in circles to aggravate it, and then they rake it linear. To the detail of, so like after he'd done it, like he finally like had got this to where he wanted to get it to, he was then like, right, I need to finish it off now. And he pokes his head over the bunker and he looks at where the flag is, and they're raking it
directly
in the direction
from
of
the
flag.
Pin.
Yeah, all of them are raked.
That's ludicrous.
I know. In direction of, in line with the flag. So, well, not the flag, but the green, because it's so far away. You know what I mean? But it's like...
And you said it's 10 minutes a bunker.
10 minutes a bunker.
And I think there's 85 bunkers
six,
here.
There's six out there.
And there's 85 bunkers out there.
Six bunker acres. There were there.
Yeah. 10 minutes a bunker, that's 850 minutes.
Yeah. It's a long time.
Jesus.
Divided by six, 2 hours work, yeah.
It was just two people just raking bunkers all day.
Well, there's six of them, bunker acres.
Yeah.
So... It's 120
that
odd minutes each.
Mental.
2-3 hours of bunker raking.
Do you think they were in as good or better condition as Blackwell bunkers?
Yeah, they're a bit better than Blackwell. But I think they're a bit better than most places when they get treated like that. But it's just the thought process. It's, you know, the two.
So when you're talking about it, I mean, obviously the presentation, how it's raked, that's nuts. But could you see the course out there that they are flat? And like, could you see that if a ball ran in? We watched one in Scott's group today. Watched it tumble into the bunker, straight up against the face and in the corner, and you're like, wow. Now, right outside
didn't
the media centre.
Just picked it up out of the bunker. It's like.
Yeah, yeah, but you can see how the ball's reacting in those bunkers. But 2014, you know, sorry, 2006 rather, you know, Woods' sole ambition was to steer clear of those bunkers. Right outside the media centre, we've got the great chipping area there. I've watched Danny Willett, Max Homer, Richie Ramsey, they've all just been throwing balls in that bunker and putting them in obtuse positions where they can't play from. That's almost like they're preparing for some hideously difficult bunker shots.
That's been really noticeable, actually, that these guys are practicing from somewhere the club golfer would never practice a bunker shot. It's it's feet out of the bunker, it's 1 foot out, 1 foot in, it's kind of everything you could think of, they are practicing it, which... Obviously, the professionals, of course, they're going to do that. But, it's been impressive.
Can we talk...
We're not done with course conditioning.
No, we're not. We're not. I want to move us on to another topic. Pin locations. So, I think one of the things here where scoring is going to be difficult to protect is going to be the pin locations.
Mm.
I think, obviously, you look at the old course last year. Those guys can just switch scoring off overnight. They can just bury pins. They can tuck them in positions where, I don't care who you are, you're not going to get it close. Holy Lake doesn't really have that so much. There's a few that they can tuck and they can bury them away, but by and large, they're going to have to give the players a look at the pin most of the time. So,
well, there's a few old holes that as you walk on the greens, you know, like, I mean, Christ, it's hit barely noticeable because the course is in such good nick. But you can see where they've been cut in the past, and there's a few that have been cut, and you're like, that would be a naughty pin, you know, and there's obviously some ridiculous ones on 17.
17, but there's almost there's no easy pin on 17. Yeah. The green's hard enough.
I mean, it's a tiny green, but it's 130 yards. What do you want? But apart from that, there's not an incredible amount of places you can hide the pins. But
and because they're not, but the greens never, are not very undulating.
Yeah,
Hoylake's
never
flat.
Really prided itself in you know, its defence being the greens.
Yeah.
Its defence is that it's rock hard.
Yeah, it's tee to green, and it's the bunkers, and it's the.
I think the wonderful thing about the R&A, way more than certainly the US Open, although they are softening, is there doesn't seem to be an obsession with par. They're not like, oh, if this is like what was last year was 23, wasn't it?
It was
like it's like. I don't think they think if it's 17 or 18 under, that's going to be the end of the world. I think all they care about is the best leaderboard. So I don't think there's like the inclination to be, all right, let's stick this 1 foot from the drop off on the back of 14 or 12, where it's like that back left of 12 where it drops off into oblivion. It's like, I don't think you're going to see a pin there. No. I don't think you're going to see silly pins because no one wants to see professional golfers like degrade a putt. Yeah. No one wants to see that.
No, agreed. Agreed. I think, so I think by and large, it'll stay as a pretty good test. The flatness of the greens, I think, is interesting. I think you're going to see a couple of players out there that will hold a huge... If you get hot with the putter, some of these guys will be holding 100 feet of putts very quickly. Mm. And that will 100% be a factor. Where do you stand on internal out of bounds? I don't mean in a literal sense. What is your opinion on it?
Do you know Tom Simpson's view on internal out of bounds?
I don't, but I've got a funny feeling you're going to illuminate me, Tom.
Yeah, Tom Simpson was a massive fan of internal out of bounds, you know?
Really?
Yeah. For those of you who don't know who Tom Simpson is, go find another podcast. Tom Simpson, obviously great course architect.
That's going to have to come out.
One of the the reason we would say that is he's the architect of Blackwell. So big affinity with Tom Simpson. But he was a big fan of internal out of bounds. And it's kind of like Joe McDonald put a great tweet up where he got one of his aerial pictures maps.
Yeah, I saw
of the 1 and 18 or 3 and 16, 3 and 18. Sorry,
took the out of bounds.
I took the out of bounds and filled it with water. And it was like, here we go. Which it's like it is. I mean, if it was water, would you get the same reaction? No. And they play. Think of Bay Hill. You know, they play Bay Hill every year. It's just like. You play around a pond.
But it's a very different hazard, isn't it? So out of bounds is incredibly penal. That said, you know it's there. And John Rahm made a really fair point in his press conference where he was saying, you know, do you feel like there's elements of the course that are unfair, like the out of bounds, like holes like 17? And he said, you can't have... It can't be unfair in this game.
Well, he said it's fair because it's unfair to everyone.
Exactly. Because it's unfair to everyone, it is by virtue of that fair. And I think that's... tangential point here is, sitting in those presses, you get a different read on what some of these guys are like. Rahm came across really well. I thought Brooks came across really, really well.
Brooks, by the way, was absolutely terrifying because if you asked in Brooks's press conference, if you ask a bad question, he pretty much lets you down.
Stares you down
and gives you like one word answer and then some of the guys going into the press conference etiquette, some of the guys just look like don't want to be there. Some of the guys obviously did want to be there, but
so I think if we look back a year ago when we were sat up in St Andrews ahead of then, there was a lot of hyperbole.
What's your view on internal out of bounds?
What's my view on it? I think it's absolutely part of the fabric of the course.
But what's your view globally on internal out of bounds?
I don't like it. I know that's contradiction, right? I know that's hypocritical or whatever, you know. But I think it works here. It's part of the course. It's part of the DNA of the course at Hoylake is that internal out of bounds is a feature.
Yeah. I think we said in the Joe McDonald pod,
what are we going to do? Take that away and
it was originally. Yeah. I mean, what do you do? It was originally a field they didn't own. Now they do own it. Okay. What do you do if you take that away? It just becomes a kind of straight hole.
Paul Rush is no different.
Yeah. Paul Rush has got it. Yeah.
It's on both sides technically. So.
Yeah, because it's chipping ground to the right and that little field they didn't have on the left.
I'm going to move us on. Last year we were sat in St Andrews and there was a lot of hyperbole talking about whether or not we were going to see 58 shot around the old or 59. The course was really firm and fast, therefore the ball was running like crazy. You know, we were genuinely sitting there thinking, are we going to see 59? Now, interestingly, no one has ever shot 65 or less than 65 at Hoylake in an Open Championship. I think we might see that happen this week.
Is that right?
That's correct.
What have you been reading?
That's correct.
Oh.
I just know stuff. I just do my research. You know, while you've been out at 3 a.m. filming Greenkeepers, I've had my head buried in
history books.
Data golf. So I guess where I'm going with this, do I think the scoring will be significantly higher? And by that I mean, will the course be playing significantly tougher than the old course in terms of the winning score? I'm not sure it will be by an enormous margin, although I expect it to be a higher winning score than at St Andrews. But I don't think we'll see anywhere near the low scores that you could see.
By higher, what does that mean? Like
higher score, i.e. closer to par.
Yeah.
Whereas, I don't expect to see crazy low 60s rounds. I will eat my words happily, and I'll be like, yeah, do you know what? That was a bad take if we see a 62. But I don't really see it. I don't see where
I don't
that
see,
is.
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw one or two from players. I don't think there's sustained 63, 64s. Do you know what
no,
I mean?
No, exactly.
Like, I don't think someone's going to go...
There's a damn good reason no one's ever broken 65 in an open here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, doesn't really matter when you can't score, but they've obviously changed 10 as well. 5-4 doesn't really matter when you shoot
yeah,
scores.
Yeah, it's just
but,
scoring, though, isn't it? You know, it's like it's but just I think decimal points of a score rather than a par. It's not one shot easier.
Yeah. I think... here we go. Gun to your head. What number are you putting on it?
20.
See, I think
I know. I don't want
I
people
think
to think that's like blasphemous towards.
I think it's more
you know,
like 16.
Royal Liverpool, and I think so much of it hangs on the wind. I really do think. Yeah. I really do think the scores.
As Bruce would say, this could age like milk.
Yeah, of course it will. It'll age dreadfully. But if the wind gets up, it very quickly becomes a different beast.
And the
six,
wind,
they were struggling. 17.
And the wind wasn't like it wasn't silly today, and they were missing greens. Mm. Like I wasn't like, oh, I should hold on to my hat. It's that sort of wind. It was like. Yeah, it was a stiff breeze, but and there was a lot of greens missed. So I don't think unless
so you're going 16, I'm going 20.
Okay.
The chances of either of us being right are pretty slim. We have such poor records when it comes to picking anything. We can't even pick our own nose. Thomas, I'm going to move us on. These are daily podcasts. These are short and sharp. I want to close out the discussion about tomorrow with some talk about the fan experience. What is your thoughts as a patron at the Open Championship and navigating those holes, and where would you sit? Where would be your choice destination to soak up the atmosphere?
Okay. The course has been getting progressively busier. I haven't really noticed until today.
That's a great observation. I was.
Thank you.
It is really astute observation. It's busier today than it was last Wednesday.
Than it was last Wednesday. Yeah, there was no one here last Wednesday. But Monday was not many people. Tuesday, a few more people. It's busy today. Tomorrow's going to be rammoed. I mean, I think the figures out of it, something like 260,000 tickets in total. Like that's a lot of heads and a lot of arms and legs. Mm. I think it's going to be a much better viewing experience than St Andrews, largely because the out and back nature and the shared fairways of St Andrews, you're basically confined to a side of the course.
Yeah, to be on the right side or the left side, yeah. And never the twain shall meet.
Whereas you don't get that here. You can kind of flank both sides of holes on occasion. It crisscrosses, it changes direction. You can kind of get around. The navigating the course is difficult. The prime spot, no doubt, is 17, but you're not going to get in there unless you want to go sit up there 5 hours before play starts. It's just going to be...
Yeah, you might get in there, but practice round at 11 o'clock on Wednesday and the queue outside. I think a lot of people are punting for the stand behind the tee, and I think the better stand to be in is the one right of the green because you get a really good view down 14 as well. I think there's only so much grandstand space there. I thought that stand at the back of six. So last night I bumped into a friend who's a member up here. He's been sloping around and will be all week. He said his favourite spot is in the L-shaped stand at the back of six. The L-shaped one, if you go up towards the top end of that, you've got a wonderful look down on that par three, the sixth that they're playing in. But you can also see the par five, the fifth. You can see them then hitting their tee shots off down seven. And you can see bits of them coming down eight. And you've got a little bit again looking back out down 14. So I think that's a pretty, pretty neat spot as well if you don't fancy queuing for ages to get into 17. But I would 100. I think the grandstands are nice. I'm not sure. I love the walking and following groups in this environment. There's just too many people.
It's too hard. It's just too difficult to follow a group. That would be my ideal. Would be to follow the group, but I think it's going to be too difficult. We found a nice spot for standing, I would say, which was kind of left.
The FootJoy bar of, last night.
It was right of nine, and. Also right of 12, the yes. corner of 12, and you kind of yes. on a little elevated dune.
Why is the maths of hole numbers so hard?
Because it's...
It is, and yet all you have to do is keep adding two, but it's so hard, isn't it?
Fucking nails, yeah.
Like, every time I'm doing it, I'm like, oh.
So, Yeah, it's basically in between two holes. It is nine par.
Yeah, it's nine. It's nine.
The par three and 12.
Yeah, it's nine and 12. But
lovely spot.
Keep
elevated.
Guessing yourself when you do it. I'm doing it all the time.
Elevated, kind of. So you can kind of see everything is just on a dune. There's lots of nice areas along that dune when you go play the par 3 13th and then 14.
You can get some really good
nice
vantage
dunes.
Points
yeah.
out there. So
I try and find a dune and get a good spot. And
well, you've got
take
to be out there if you're going to find a dune.
Yeah.
The rest of the course is quite flat. So you get out.
I think the far part of the course is probably where I would like to be. You know, that 10, 11, 12, that sort of area.
12 will be a fascinating hole to watch this week.
Yeah.
You know, building on that, 3, 4... Obviously 17, but 12 will be fascinating. That's really tricky. Watched them today, really struggling to get those balls. One, just steering away from trouble off the tee, but second, hitting a decent shot and getting on the short stuff was difficult. Thomas, we're going to close this podcast out with a brief run recap on a very nice evening at the FootJoy Tented Village.
Mm. Yeah, that village is pretty sick, isn't it?
Yeah, mega.
It's got the teepees,
bit of an industry gathering.
Yeah, it was nice. We managed to not make fools of ourselves. Well,
no, I think we achieved it.
We tried our best. there's only so much you can do.
You just do that to me.
I've just
sat on my little chair.
I've just pushed his lever on his chair, and he's dropped about a foot.
It was great. So no laying up. I think Neil and KVV are on stage with Wyndham Clark. That was cool.
Perez.
Sophie Walker did some stuff on stage. Victor Perez was there. So that was all very nice. Really like cool, like glamping yurt with all the lighting in. Nice food and stuff. But I just thought it was a really cool thing. And seeing like families getting out of their cars and, you know, pitching up for a few days to stay in the tents and watch the Open with their family. It was like, oh, that's really nice.
Mm.
They
set up like a football field and like the kids were playing football outside the tent.
And for all the criticism that you can kind of give the, you know, organisers and yeah, we're all sort of like very critical. You look at that and you think, that's just lovely. Like families of kids going to watch the Open. You look at LACC a few weeks ago, those kids would never get within a country mile of that place because there's just tons of people there with AT&T and all the different corporate sponsors. I just thought it's a lovely sight, and the fact that FootJoy are putting that together I thought was pretty cool. I
truly think this has got potential to be the best major of the year.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, I think it's got potential to just like...
Yeah, of course.
I mean, the crowds are already... I've said it before on this podcast, I'll say it for the rest of time. The northwest coast of England is just replete with amazing golf, and people are all educated golfers. They all play Lynx golf. They just get it. And like there's loads of people here. They kind of, everybody's just super engaged in the golf, and I think it's going to be a great Open. I really do.
Yeah, no, I do. I think it
this
will
is the
be
best
too.
Day of the Open, though, because it's the possibility.
This is where you layer the hyperbole.
This is your idea. You know, when you say like getting out of the car and, you know, sniffing the air outside a golf club is the best thing. The day before a major is always the best day because possibilities at this point. I mean, Rory's going to win the Open. It's just going to be like everything's going to be amazing tomorrow.
Oh, God, to be fair, we did quite well getting 37 minutes into this podcast and not talking about Rory winning it.
That's who I am at Renaissance.
I want to just talk very briefly about bumping into the volunteer greenkeepers that we saw last night at FootJoy. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, they're my buddies for the week, aren't they?
Yeah, are they?
Yeah, they're my.
They're your ride and dies.
Yeah. They're the guys that I've kind of been chilling out with and hanging out with and filming and.
Yeah, like Fraser, for example. I mean, like, I'm sure he won't mind. Fraser's a staunch fan of Cookie Jar Golf, loves it. A friend of ours has been to a couple of events, plays a bit of golf down at Deal. Fraser is not a greenkeeper, but he has helped out Bledge in things like final qualifying for a number of years. You know, he's a very practical guy. He has his own plumbing business and stuff. But I'm almost giving out too much for GDPR on a beer, so I've got to be careful. So he's quite a practically minded guy, but he just loves greenkeeping. So he goes and helps out on the big events. And he's like, shit, I'm here with like the best greenkeepers in the country. You know, the head greenkeeper from Birtdale, you know, they're all down from Dornoch, Southern Ness, you name it, Parkstone, they're up from
Sunningdale,
all over the show. Yeah. And he's there. It's just, I think it's brilliant that the work those guys are putting in. It's completely extra on top to get out of bed and be there at 3:30 in the morning to be lining up the raking of bunkers with the pin and stuff like that. And to be, he says it takes hours just to get that sky bunker down on the range all set. He had to, Fraser was telling me last night, he had to move Hovland on because he was like, look, I've got to get this thing ready for tomorrow morning for the sky guys. So he had to tell Hovland to move on. You're like, it's just very cool. I just think it's lovely.
Yeah, it was funny. We were with the guys and they were like, we were with them around about 4 or 5 o'clock or whatever. And the range, obviously, all the divots from the range. This is something you don't think about. All the divots from the range are like a bomb site.
It looked like my kitchen floor when my son's had a packet of crisps.
Yeah. it looks like the moon. Like these divots are absolutely everywhere. And he's like, yeah, we've got to go out and clean that.
And it's like mint the next morning, but they obliterate that range, don't they? Absolutely obliterate it.
He was like, you should see some of these divots. It's just like, they're 2 inches deep. I mean, what's going on? Oh, yeah. He was like, some of these divots are like beaver tails. Like,
that's interesting. It's a bit softer, though, over there, isn't it?
Well, yeah, a little bit, I suppose, on the Muni land. But
I'm surprised, because those boys get in very shallow on it. You know, that's
some of them get steep. Hosts get steep.
Next thing we know, I've been accused of hitting balls over it. Royal
Oak Munich. Not bring this back to you anyway.
Is Green there anything legends. Else we can say? Parting words before we get this championship underway, Thomas. Is there anything else people should be keeping their eye out for? Things like our daily blog, for example, that's going to be written up every day.
Yeah, blog obviously yesterday.
Would you point people towards our newsletter? Would you point them towards, I don't know, like our Story of a Golf Club film from a few years ago? No, I'm just asking you. I'm curious. If you had a mic in your hand and you had a chance to, you know, tell our listeners and point them towards some really cool bits of content that just we've done or other people, where would you point them?
Well, you know, even I'm on the ground and we're here and we're doing everything that we're doing, I still read the quad. You know, Jeff sends his quad out every day. I'm still reading that in the mornings.
I think it's a wonderful resource, that, for 40 quid a year. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's just brilliant. Like, if you don't subscribe to the Quadrilateral, just do, because Jeff's insights are pretty good. He's very salty, which is quite nice.
Yeah, yeah.
He likes to have a pop at everybody.
He's very dry, isn't he?
I'm actually looking at him. He's just over there, and I'm just gathering intel. But that's obviously a good resource if you're here. There's, to be honest, there's just
I quite
so
like
many
the fried
people.
Egg pod with Jasper from Value 18. That was a good... If you want to learn a little bit more about the architecture and why Hoylake is perhaps seen as an underrated golf course, but why a lot of people who are into golf course architecture are very reverent about Hoylake, I would point you towards that.
Well, Hoylake and St Andrews are considered... Yeah. You know, there was a time where the Open was only going to be Hoylake and St Andrews.
Mm. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, wow. That's what they wanted. It was just Hoylake.
It's really coming on.
I've done a million pods on Hoylake at this point. I'm in. But, you know, it was suggested that could be a thing. They're very similar. What's the Alistair McKenzie quote about the old... For those people who don't understand it,
they have not brains enough. Nor have not played it long enough to appreciate
its many virtues. And it's the same for Hoylake. It's a
Point them to all of our back catalogue of content. You would also strongly urge them to go and check out the Quadrilateral.
Yeah, just keep watching it on repeat, you know, like just watch it a few times.
Yeah, if you're going out to the shop, just put
on your Mac and then go to the shops.
Yeah, no harm.
All there for the likes. This has been
rambling.
Who
are you going to watch tomorrow is my last question.
I am going to be up for the first hit of the day. And I'm going to follow. It's going to be difficult. And I've just said I don't want to follow anyone. But I think the Matty Jordan, we've got loads of friends up here at Hoylake. They're going to be doing the same thing. So kind of try and join in with those guys and follow Matty around. What a fairy tale that would be, you know. And I pray, you know, I really do hope he does well. I think it's phenomenal qualifying. West Lancs, wonderful golf course. Just, you can see it, you know, from here. If you stand on the dunes, you can see up to West Lancs. And he's qualified there to get in his home open. Obviously, member of Royal Liverpool. Something Charlie didn't put in his blog piece is that the Callaway bags, which are pretty rank, but the Callaway tour bag, his Callaway tour bag is the only one with the Royal Liverpool logo on.
Yeah, very nice. Richie Ramsey's in that group with Brandon Gray, so that'll be a lot of fun. We're obviously pals with Richie. It's great to see him playing in an Open Championship. I'll be pulling for him pretty hard as well. So, Thomas, yeah. How long have we had this thing recording for?
39 minutes.
That'll be enough.
Adios.
Watch this.